taxes was feeling so stuck. Sitting in traffic, squeezing into a parking spot, all to squeeze in getting tax help during your lunch break. Now Taxes is a TurboTax expert who does your taxes for you, while you go about your day getting real-time notifications about their progress and the most money back guaranteed. Now this is Taxes, Intuit TurboTax. Get an expert now on TurboTax.com. Only available with TurboTax Live Full Service. Real-time updates only in iOS mobile apps. See guarantee details at TurboTax.com/guarantees.
Hello, and welcome to a new episode of All My Best Friends Are Digital, a podcast about video games and the stories they tell. My name is Caitlin, and I'm here with my co-host, Mark. Mark, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you, Caitlin. How are you?
I am doing great.
Now, you may notice a certain sort of sexy rasp to my voice. This is not because I am doing a soulful R&B impression. This is because I am sick as a dog and weak as a kitten. And I am very sad to hear that this is to be a new episode, because I thought we were just going to be recreating one of our old episodes, playing it back word for word, and then I could go take a break and cough my lungs out. This is very disappointing.
I'm very sorry. Try to keep your lungs inside your body.
Oh, is that where they belong? Okay, good.
Yeah, yeah. Today, we're going to be discussing the games we've been playing lately, and then we're going to be talking about the game Road Rash for our gaming opinions on old school funware segment, followed by our feature game, Thank Goodness You're Here, and then finally, we will be shouting out games that we are looking forward to. So, Mark, what have you been playing lately?
Caitlin, I must plead for your indulgence. I'm feeling a great sense of guilt and shame, and so I would like to work up to this ability to disclose. I realize this is a safe space, and I realize that you would never share what I'm about to tell you with anyone else, that this is just going to stay between the two of us, but if we could actually talk about your game first while I muster up the personal courage to disclose this.
Sure, we can do that. So, before I get into the game that or the games that I've been playing lately. Okay, so first of all, everyone maybe knows. Okay, maybe not because of when we're recording it. Anyway, Dragon Age: The Veilguard just came out and I've been playing that, but that's not the game I'm going to talk about because we're going to talk about that in a future episode. The other games that I've been playing. So, I have a little bit of a complex where I can get kind of insecure about the games that I play, because I am a woman who plays video games, and I've often felt, especially when I was younger, that I had something to prove. Like, oh, you know, like, I play, quote, real games.
I'm familiar with the brand of complete toxic nonsense that you're talking about, and for what it is worth, I think everyone who listens to this podcast rejects it fully.
Yes. It's the kind of thing that's like made me feel a little sheepish to talk about some of the games I've talked about already, like Pokemon Sleep or Neko Atsume. And it applies to this one too, but I am just so freaking excited to talk about this game because I love it so much. So it's actually not one game. I played three of them because they're all very short and very cheap, but it's a building full of cats, a castle full of cats, and a tower full of cats.
I think I see the common theme.
So these are really adorable hidden object games where you have to find all the cats in the level. And they are absolutely delightful. So each of the levels is like this. It's this line art with generally pretty flat colors or gentle gradients. There's an indicator in the corner of the screen that shows you how many cats are left to find on the level. There's typically like already visible cats, and then there's also hidden cats. And there's two indicators of how many you have left. And when you find a cat, you click on it and the cat gets colored in, or you can click on an object like maybe a drawer in the room and it'll open up and a cat will pop out. And that's one of the hidden cats. So a building full of cats is the first one. It's by far the shortest of all the ones that I played. So I got 100% on it in Steam in under an hour. And it's cute. The art is not quite as detailed as the other two. So if you were going to play it, I would honestly say to play it first, because if you've played the other ones, this one doesn't measure up at all. but it is still cute. A Castle Full of Cats is the second one, and also my favorite by far. there's like this cute little story about how the castle is under a curse and it's changed the forms of the cats. So some of them will look like ghosts or skeletons or bats. And you click on them. And when you click on them, there's this adorable little tiny kind of animation where the cat shifts from being the bat or whatever into a cat. And it's so cute. It's so delightful. It's really fun. It makes it really fun to just look through all these levels and find the cats.
Question. So yes. If the cat is not a cat, how do you know to identify the missing cat?
So there are no other animals. So
got it.
Even the bats look pretty feline.
All right.
And the skeletons look like skeleton cats. So that is what helps. But yeah, they're all really short. They're really cheap. I believe a portion of the proceeds for all the purchases goes toward helping real life cats, which is cute. The dev is called Dev Cats, and every single one of their games that I saw on Steam is cat themed, which is appropriate. And they are great. I believe even there's like an arcade full of cats, which I haven't tried yet, but I believe that one is free. So if this has sounded at all interesting, you can go check out the free one. I believe there's like 5 free levels, and then you can buy the DLC for a couple bucks that unlocks the others. But yeah, that's a something full of cats. Really, really enjoyed them.
I see here that they have a number of free games. They have an arcade full of cats. They have a park full of cats. They have Stray Cats in Cozy Town, which thank you for identifying the vibe of your game. And I say this not as a pejorative, but I kind of picked up on what you were putting down here, Dev Cats. And then in case you thought that there was further confusion, there's Cozy Room. There's a Shelter Full of Cats demo. There's a lot of cats to be had. And I was familiar with this genre of hidden object thing, and I knew it was huge.
Yeah.
There are, I think, literally thousands of games in the hidden object genre. Is this one that you have well traveled before, or is this kind of your first experience with them?
So I've played a handful of them. A lot of the ones that I found have been on mobile devices, so they're naturally pretty ad-filled or sometimes just bad. Yeah, and this one, at least for me, the price tag was really exactly where I needed it to be. I think for the games that do cost money, I think the most expensive one is $6.
A lot of these are around $3 Canadian, so yeah, they seem very inexpensive. The mobile game market is just awash in trash.
It is.
And I'm not going to defend everything in the PC gaming market by any stretch of the imagination, but generally speaking, there's a far lower proportion of nakedly mercenary non-games that exist, or at least that get very popular. It was indeed in the context of the mobile market that I was first exposed to hidden object games. Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously the ways that you can cash in on that can be pretty transparent. And it's so hard. Like, I game on a lot of things. I game on a lot of portable devices. I've never really felt tempted to game a lot on my phone because it just seems like such a cesspit.
Mm-hmm.
With my apologies to all the... I'm sure there are really good games there. But honestly, it just seems like a set of traps. But with respect to hidden object games in particular, I imagine that there's a bit of an art to making them really good, right? Because it's all about the quality of the image that you're presenting and the quality of the scene. Obviously, the cuteness of the cats in this particular case.
So going back to mobile games really quick, a lot of the mobile games I play, I only play because friends have recommended to me that they are good. Because there's so much stuff there where the advertisements are completely unrelated to the actual game, which seems ridiculous that it's even allowed, but whatever. Or it's straight up garbage, or it could be a good game if it wasn't for the fact that they try to nickel and dime you with everything. Like, yeah, mobile games are rough.
I remember when I experimented with Zenless Zone Zero, just the disconnect between the production values and the incredibly mercenary nature was so striking and jarring.
Mm-hmm.
And even some fundamental technical issues are, just as an indication, this is just one bugbear that I have about mobile gaming in particular, but just about shoddy development in general. Some very mature, very sophisticated, technologically advanced mobile games even now don't have built-in gamepad support. Which, yeah, it's a phone. It's meant to be played on the phone, sure. But with the increase of Bluetooth collapsible controllers or of Android devices with built-in gaming controls, which is very much my bag, you'd figure that this is the kind of thing that would either be A, more prevalent, or at the very least, B, more transparently obvious which one is which. And I find even just trying to figure out which ones have built-in support is terrible. Whereas, again, we could have a discussion about Valve being an abusive monopolist, and in many ways they are. But at the very least, there's a standardized information consumption network there. And, like, I know where to look on a game on Steam as to whether to what extent it has gamepad support. But in the context again, just one way, one of the millions of ways in which mobile gaming is a tremendous minefield.
Yeah, I remember. So I played Diablo Immortal a while back, gotten a lot of crap for, I mean, a lot of things. But that one was actually the first mobile game that I did play using like a gamepad. And it was amazing how much better the game felt doing that than having to play on the touchscreen. And so it's always surprising to me when a game with a control scheme like that doesn't support controllers.
Yeah, it's mind-blowing. But going back to the cats, as yes. well we should, as any good and decent person should, did you play this on a phone or on a tablet?
No, actually, I played it on my PC. I bought them on Steam. I am unsure if they are available on mobile, although I think they would perfectly translate to mobile. I mean, the first one, A Building Full of Cats, actually doesn't have zoom-in capabilities, so that one wouldn't really work on phones. But a castle full of cats and a tower full of cats let you zoom and pan all over the screen, okay. So I think that would work really well on mobile if they don't have it.
Sorry for forgetting. Of course you got them on Steam. I was just thinking precisely about that issue of scanning and panning and zooming in. Of course, the same problem exists on desktop hardware or any other kind of hardware because it would be very difficult to curate the experience across different kinds of screen presentations. That would be another one of my concerns. So let me ask the obvious question. I've been assuming that the appeal of these kinds of games, setting aside the appeal of the cats, which one does with great difficulty, of course. But setting that aside, I assume that the appeal is vaguely in the same vein as Where's Waldo, for those that are familiar with that childhood experience. Okay. Yep. Because I look at these pictures, and I look at these pictures like, this is about being able to take in the sweep of a particular tableau and in a very sort of cozy vibe, being able to appreciate the visuals, and every once in a while getting the sort of the dopamine hit of being like, oh, there's a kitty. You hit the kitty and it animates and it's nice. You know, you move on. It's a way to engage with the visuals, which I guess at a core level is more or less what video gaming is all about, if you want to strip it down to its bare essentials.
Yeah. And it's really funny that you brought up Where's Waldo, because for some reason that didn't occur to me at all. But a while back, a few years back, I had bought a Where's Waldo book for my daughter because I loved them when I was a kid and I wanted to, you know, let her experience some of it. And after that, I started looking for games that would have that kind of vibe. And I had a really surprisingly difficult time finding ones that I thought would be good. And I was just like, This feels like something that should be obvious and exist in many ways. And even there was a Where's Waldo game, but it was honestly not very good.
Ooh.
So, yeah.
So it sounds like you got out of these the experience that you wanted.
Yes, absolutely. Excellent. They were really fun.
Are you going to be going into other environments full of cats?
I definitely will. I am currently, great. I'm partway through a tower full of cats. It's currently on pause while I Dragon Age it up, but I shall be returning and then checking out the other games in their catalog after.
That is great. I wish you a future full of cats.
Thank you very much. Are you ready to talk about your shameful whatnots?
Well, you see, I say that, and then you put me to actual, not comedic shame. Well, no, I was doing a setting the table stakes here. I'm doing a bit of a bit. I feel a certain degree of shame, but you, of course, have to deal with the actual burdens of toxicity, as opposed to I just have to deal with the imagined burdens of my own self standards, which is entirely different. So I apologize for pretending as though I have to deal with anything serious, because this was a joke. I've been at various low moments. I've talked before about wanting to have a podcast game. I played Halls of Torment to my satisfaction. I was pretty much done with that, especially when it started putting me literally to sleep, which is not even too much of a dig. It's just, you know, I paid my $5. I got my 13 hours, which is something that we mentioned, by the way, in our Patreon newsletter, which I'm very pleased with how that turned out, sort of a retrospective on what we did in October.
Yeah.
Anyway. So I went and I installed all 120 gigs of Destiny 2.
Okay. And
so it's been about 3 or 4 years since I have Destiny'd.
Mm-hmm.
And I went through two periods of Destiny in my life. One of them was very hardcore, and I had a regular raiding crew and went and raided every weekend. And then I kind of fell apart, and then I stopped playing Destiny. And then a couple of years after that, there was a period of a brief period where I tried to get in. I tried to get a raiding crew. It didn't quite work. And so that kind of fell apart too. And so I played about 5 or 6 hours of Destiny 2 this week. And I don't even know where that time went. It's one of those things where, you know, you're not paying attention. You look up the clock and suddenly it's 2 a.m. kind of deals. Mm-hmm. And to a certain extent, the problem is that there have now been so many story campaigns that I've missed out on. Every time I load it up, it shows me a new intro cinematic of a different story campaign that has transpired since I last logged in. Because Destiny 2 remembers all my stuff. All my junk is still sitting around. All my, like, everything. My shaders, my icons, my engrams, everything. It's just sitting there waiting patiently forever. Yeah. And so I log in and it's like, oh, okay, well, here's the new intro. Oh, here's the intro to the next thing. And so consequently, I can't even begin to understand what the heck is going on. And I don't even understand. I've got all these mission markers all over the place. And yeah. So it's not a very good way. Like, you would figure Destiny has spent a lot of time. I'm not going to say that they've ever been particularly successful, but they spent a lot of time thinking about how to onboard new players.
Mm-hmm.
And they've had a number of revamps over the years in an attempt to do that. And I can't speak to any of that because I started playing in Destiny 1. And so I haven't been a new player for any of those revamps. But you'd figure they'd spend a little bit of time trying to think about what it's like for somebody who's been away for a few years.
Yeah.
But they haven't. And setting aside the fact that there are new currencies and I don't know how they work, that's fine. Whatever. Any game of this ilk, I expect that internalizing the economy is going to take me a long time. But just the bizarre profusion of different mission markers and story beats is so outlandish that I have no idea what's going on. And Destiny has never been very good at communicating its lore.
Yeah.
But it's a bit of a shame because some of the things I might be inclined to engage with. You know, I finish a strike that I've done 100 times before. And then suddenly there's a new voice across the comm talking to Shax. And it's like, okay, well, I'd like to get on board with this because Shax is a bit of a jerk and I've never liked him.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't even get who is this person? Where do I, how many hours of nonsense do I have to, And then I just get intimidated. And then I get tired.
Yeah.
And ultimately, it's not making me keen to keep going. I mean, on top of that, I'm kind of surprised at how little things have changed. What I found out that I wanted after doing it was I wanted to go into a strike and suck. I wanted to go into a mission and be bad. I wanted to be presented with new kinds of weapons and a new meta and basically a whole bunch of things that made me go, oh, what? And to a large extent, they haven't done that. And we're dealing with the same relative weapons. Like, I was messing around, and I go into a strike, and I load up bad juju and the fusion rifle that I like and the sword that I like, and I'm playing with these guys with light levels that are near the level cap, and I end up getting more kills than both of them combined. And this I was never a very, very good Destiny player, right? I'm just saying that it's like I can go back without having missed a beat, and to a certain extent, the thing, all the things that don't make sense are the things that I wanted to be introduced in a slow way, and all the things that do make sense I wanted to be, seem new and fresh. And so that is precisely miscalibrated to the experience that I wanted.
Yeah, so that's really interesting. So basically, there's been a whole bunch of story campaigns since you last played, and it's just letting you do all of them, like, at the same time if you want?
Yes.
I get that on one hand, because if you, you know, if your friend is like, hey, Mark, why don't we do this new thing that just came out together? Then you could, probably. But on the other hand, why overwhelm somebody with 800 different options? I mean, I guess part of it is just not considering the I've been playing this game for 4 years, but I didn't pick it up for a while thing.
It is very strange. Part of it is because a lot of this is kept behind different kinds of paywalls. You know, you buy, the way Destiny 2 works is it's nominally a free-to-play game, but I would argue in a non-exploitive way. Mm-hmm. Because you can throw money at them to get cosmetics if you want. And I'm sure to a lot of people that ends up triggering a whole bunch of exploitive instincts. But I've never found it problematic personally, because all the things that you can get with real money, Destiny 2 is relatively generous in terms of fake in-game currency as well, right? In the entire universe of cosmetics, it was throwing stuff at me far faster than I cared to bother with any of this cosmetic stuff anyway. So just by playing the game, you end up with a large retinue of all this quote-unquote paid content anyway. If you want a specific thing, yeah, you're going to have to pay for it. Otherwise, you're entering some random loot table. But by and large, you cannot throw money to get guns. You cannot throw money to get the perks that you want. This is all cosmetic stuff. And as I say, you have tons of free dress-up options without giving them any cash. Then there are the expansions. And the expansions are very much like a full season of content. And I'm not going to quibble with the dollar per time ratio at all. It's very, very good. But the problem is that the game gives you the ability to load up these quest lines in a sort of emaciated, parsimonious way without buying the expansion. So it's throwing me all. It's like, okay, so Lost Light, you don't have access to that campaign, not the full version anyway, but here's some story mission markers for you. And then the same thing with half a dozen other expansions. And I'm just getting overwhelmed. And it's just all these weird story beats. So like Crow is at various points in his development, at various stages. He's been a very, very important character. I was there for his birth. It was all very interesting. Yeah. As a character. But apparently Captain Tight Pants is back. That's how I refer to Cade 6, because he's voiced by Nathan Fillion, who I only call Captain Tight Pants. And so he's back, okay. That's a bit of a strange story. So Nathan Fillion voiced this character Cade. They lost him, either because of scheduling constraints or he wanted too much money. Then, in a campaign years and years and years ago, they killed him off. But they didn't have Nathan Fillion as the voice actor for that campaign. They had some other dude doing his Nathan Fillion impression. And now, Cade 6 is back, and he's voiced by Nathan Fillion. So it's like, all right. And this is all very jarring, to a certain extent.
I didn't know he was back. Okay.
He's back.
Interesting.
And we're talking about a storyline that involves immortal gun zombies anyway. So when they wanted to kill somebody, I foolishly believed that they meant it. That he wasn't. So I'm a little disappointed. It's kind of like the Marvel syndrome. It's like when everyone comes back to life, it's hard to take stakes too seriously. And even though I knew it was driven by actor considerations, I kind of, like, I still don't know what they plan on doing with Lance Reddick. Rest in peace, Lance Reddick. He voices a very important character, Zavala. Zavala's still around. He's chilling out in the tower. I can go talk to him, and I get the same canned voice lines all the time, and I feel sad because Lance Reddick is dead. Anyway, it's a whole deal. So there are three components to Destiny in terms of why I think it's really well done, aside from all this lore nonsense, which, as I say, I think they botched it completely. But the three things are basically immediately triggered in my memories. One of them is the power fantasy. Like, this feels more like a superhero experience than anything else. You're flying around. You've got these great movement options. It's very, very full of motion in a very satisfying way, and stuff is exploding. It's great. And the gunplay is as smooth as it's ever been. I have yet to encounter another game where the gunplay is as satisfying as Destiny. And then there's the build, just being able to fiddle around with other stats and stuff, and they do a pretty good job of tweaking that every season. There's always a new buff that they introduce. Currently, the buff is armor stacks. I don't quite know how they work. They're pretty bad at explaining what they are, but they don't revamp everything every season. They just touch a couple things. They have these things called strands. I don't know what strands are. I don't think I'm going to bother figuring it out. And then the third aspect is the social element, which, unfortunately, I just don't know anybody else that plays Destiny. I don't know anybody else that wants to go and do raid. I didn't even know that I want to go and raid ever again. But I'm looking at the setup. It's like, okay, well, these are things you need a fire team for. These are things you need a fire team for. It's like, well, look, I've done tens and tens and possibly even hundreds of hours of strikes and story missions in Destiny. I don't know if I need to go back. And so it was nice to be reminded of all these things. And I, in times of trouble, go with what you know, and that's probably what prompted me to just install the thing and see what's going on. Like, the last expansion, The Final Shape, has gotten nothing but plaudits in terms of the overall story direction. I'm sure it's good, but frankly, I have yet to experience storytelling in Final Fantasy XIV, but I've never found storytelling in a massively multiplayer game to be particularly compelling. I like protagonists. Yeah. I like the named characters. I like specific people being able to focus on specific stories. The grand sweep of it all just ends up being very impersonal and unsatisfying in these contexts. So I stopped and went back to Metaphor ReFantazio. So that's that's by and large my story of re-engaging with Destiny 2. So I'm not proud of it, but here we are.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, Destiny 2... I did not raid very long. I did a handful of raids, but it was some of the most fun I had in Destiny. I thought those were really fun. They were very well designed, at least the one that I was working on. But it was also difficult to have the right number of people who consistently wanted to go. And yeah, it didn't end up working out long term, but
it was not unlike the challenges that many people face in terms of keeping together a tabletop role-playing group. Not only do you need a bunch of dedicated people that all want to go do the same thing at the same time, you also need to make sure, and this is the crucial X factor that you can only often find out later after you've already messed it up, they all have to want to do it the same way, right?
Yeah.
We've all been in those contexts. Either specifically in tabletop role-playing or otherwise, where everyone's on board and super enthusiastic, but they have radically different conceptions about the activity should feel like. And consequently, you end up with these fits that don't work well. Like, if you're in the D&D group that wants to tell stories about getting the right cheese for the reception that you're hosting for whatever, and someone else is like, where's the next combat encounter? Can we get to the next combat encounter? I need to murder a kobold or I'm going to go insane. That's just not going to work. Or vice versa. If you have the one person who's like, oh, but can I get something inset into my sword hilt? And everyone else is like, we got some murdering to do. Let's get to it. And raiding is the same way. And I actually had some friction with the raid group that I was in because, you know, again, different sets of expectations. And so you have to have the right level of chatter. It's a whole thing. Mm-hmm. It's a whole thing.
It is.
But when it's there, it's magical. Again, very much like tabletop role-playing. There, those periods where, again, the raid design is so good, and if you get the right people together, it's an incomparable experience. And so I guess it was echoes of that keep me wondering, maybe someday, but no, Destiny 2 is done for me. It's gone. It's done and dusted. It's just...
Aww.
Well, look, it's conceivable. There's a small number of people from the old days. If by some magic they reached out and said, hey, let's do this, I would do it in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Right? Because I remember those guys, and they were great guys, and I loved talking to them, and I loved raiding with them. But frankly, it's like chasing the dragon. I'm pretty good at not chasing dragons most of the time, but as I said, I've been sick this week, and in a moment of weakness, I decided to download 120 gigs of free-to-play shooter. And so... I don't regret having spent another 5 or 6 hours. I remember all the things that made it great, but I'm also remembering all the reasons why it can't be that great again. You can't go back, Caitlin.
Yep, it's sad, but unfortunately true fact of life sometimes.
So let's pour one out for Destiny 2, and also let us pour one out for Lance Riddick, truly a talented, beautiful, beautiful man.
So next, let's move on to gaming opinions on old school funware. We're going to be talking about the game Road Rash. Mark, you mind telling us a little bit about Road Rash?
So this was released by Electronic Arts in 91. It spawned a franchise. It was originally on the Genesis, and it saw three games on the Genesis to great commercial success. In point of fact, Road Rash 2, which was released in 92, is the fifth highest grossing Genesis game of all time.
Wow.
Which, given that it is not published by Sega and was not an arcade port nor a Sonic the Hedgehog game, is rather impressive. And it was pitched as sort of a beat-em-up racing game. It is a motorcycle game in which you can engage in fisticuffs with your fellow racers, possibly get pulled over for speeding and or assault in the middle of a race. And it's built around a campaign mode where you get prize winnings and you upgrade your bike. What did you think of Road Rash, Caitlin?
So I was... All right, so once again, I just went into it not really knowing anything, because that's how I do. I know, everyone is very surprised. So I learned over time, like, oh, I can punch this guy when I go by him. Cool. I heard sirens and I was like, are cops trying to pull me over? And I ignored them, as one does. And eventually they went away. But it was more fun than I was expecting. I don't really understand the whole feeding people up while driving by them, because I felt like I could just drive by them and it would be fine. Maybe in the later levels that becomes more important. I'm not sure. I only played some of the early game. And honestly, my biggest complaint is I picked the level that was supposed to be the Pacific Coast, and the image that it showed me had palm trees and a beach and ocean. And then I started the level and I saw cows and barns and no ocean anywhere. So what's up with that, Road Rash?
Yeah, it's all supposed to take place in California, and I've driven the Pacific Coast Highway, and the Pacific Coast level does not look at all like anything I saw on the Pacific Coast Highway.
Yeah, it was not what I was expecting.
I agree with you, both about the setting and about other expectations. I came into this relatively blind. Road Rash is just a long-running franchise that I knew existed. I was never a Genesis guy, and so the Genesis catalog is largely alien to me. Mm-hmm. But I like beat-em-up games, and I figured there has to be some sort of reason why it's one of those perennial classics. There's too little violence. It's got the traditional setup of a lot of racing games, whether they're the retro racing games or even the more recent ones. Like, even Gran Turismo does this. The race starts, and you have 7 computer opponents, and they all just rock it out at staged levels in front of you, right? They just immediately zoom out, so you beat them one by one. So it doesn't actually feel like an actual race, everyone starts. And if you're not doing NASCAR and you're not really spaced out, well, you know, you're jockeying for position pretty much the entire time. Unless and until someone breaks it. I'm not deep into motorsports. But you get the idea. There's no rubber band AI where the person you have to beat who's going to win the race starts the race a kilometer out in front of you. A kilometer is 0.6 of a mile for our American listeners. My sincere apologies. But in that context, all you do is you're just passing people. So yeah, you can give them a smack on the way through.
Yeah.
But frankly, at that point, it just seems mean-spirited. There's no utility to it.
Absolutely.
The only thing that that's going to do is possibly get you within range of them smacking you back, and you have to worry about your long-term endurance. Meanwhile, the Gomer that you just passed, you're not going to see them again unless you've made a terrible mistake. So what's the point?
Yeah. Yeah, very odd. I know that one of the levels I started, and some girl, I forget her name, but she was like, hey, you should watch out for this one guy because he has a bat, but you can grab it if he tries to swing it at you. But I saw no evidence of that. That said, I don't know. Maybe he just wasn't threatened enough by me as I passed him.
Yeah, not enough beat-em-up in the beat-em-up racing. That is for darn sure. And the other thing that I found very frustrating, I'm going to use the Caitlin word frustrating, is that your early bike has your starting bike, your starting setup, your handling stat is basically more or less maxed out, and your speed, your top speed is relatively low. What this makes it feel like is this, if anything, frankly, is what I would show to somebody who says that they don't understand the virtue of analog controls. Because you tap to one side and your bike jumps over like a lane and a half before you even realize what's happened. And so it's that the controls are just super touchy.
Yeah. It requires a very light touch.
Things get a little better as you upgrade your bike and you're going faster. But frankly, it's so disarming. Like, normally when you're in a tight curve, you figure, oh, you have to hold down the direction or slow down or something. No. You just need to tap to the side maybe twice. If you do it a third time, you're just asking to go into the shoulder of the other side of the curve. That's something I'm accustomed to in the context of a racing game.
Yeah, normally that's something like that only happens when you grossly like overcorrect while you're trying to dodge something. Like, yeah, it was incredibly easy to accidentally drive off the road if you weren't careful about how you were controlling. So it was very much you know, tap, 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 tap the other direction. None of this holding the left or right buttons down.
And one wipeout and you're toast. It's very much an all or nothing experience. It's similarly keeping to this control element. It's like, oh, you tapped three times. Oh, you're done. If you run into something, you're treated to a comparatively well done series of animations of your poor driver going over the handlebars and rolling for what seems like forever. And then that poor schmuck has to stand up and run back to their bike, which takes forever.
Okay, that's amazing. I actually didn't crash into anything while I was playing, so that's really funny.
Oh, good for you. Clearly you adapted to the controls much better than I did, because it took me a while to get to the point, because you basically have to run a perfect race, or you're just done, because it's the slowest thing imaginable. I did try some of the sequels, and I will say that there's one definite advantage to Road Rash 2 and 3, and that is that after you wipe out, your bike also proceeds to roll around after you rather than just stopping in place. And so, yes, you're out of commission for a substantial period of time while this tumbling happens, the eponymous road rash, if you will. But the distance that you then have to run backwards to get back to the bike is considerably diminished.
Okay, that sounds much better. Yeah, so the motorcycle doesn't, you know, stop and then just stay exactly where it is.
Sitting, waiting for you patiently.
Yeah, okay.
And this is really weird because in 92, granted the different console, different development team, the mixture of violence and vehicles was done really well in Mario Kart, right? If you're going to do... Even if we want to talk about rock and roll racing, like as we were talking about previously, or I'm very sorry, Random Psychos of Motorsports. What was the RPM acronym?
Radical Psycho Machine Racing.
thank you. The predecessor to rock and roll racing. You've got to do ranged weapons. That's the way of things. Otherwise, you're just smacking people as you're passing them, which is not a good mechanism for game design, I don't think.
Yeah, although I didn't realize how neatly it would fit in with our feature game that's coming up next, the Slap Former.
Oh, yes. Well, there's that.
Yes.
I dare say you're correct on that score. I was very disappointed by Road Rash. I didn't like the racing, and I didn't like the violence, frankly.
Yeah, the violence felt, and again, maybe later in the game it actually matters, but it felt pointless. Like you said, it just felt mean. Like, yeah, if you're passing this person anyway, why do you need to punch them off their bike? And even, like, I would have had to purposefully slow down in order to beat someone down enough for them to fall. And it's like, that just doesn't make any sense to me. Just drive past them.
Exactly. Honestly, if there was the possibility of knocking them off their bike, that would have been one thing. But they've got a life bar, and it's not over large, but it's definitely to the case that one or two passing strikes are not going to do anything of consequence to them.
Yeah.
But if you have this engagement with every single person you pass, it's going to do something of consequence to you. So I just stopped. I would just give them a wide berth and be like, all right, bye. At that point, you're just playing a mediocre racing game on a 16-bit console.
Yeah, I mean, there was one point, the very first level I was doing, I was driving for a while without encountering anyone else. And I was like, do I need to slow down and like beat the crap out of everybody behind me in order for this level to end? And no, it eventually ended. I got to the finish line. But yeah, I was very surprised by how little there was to do after I passed everybody.
Of course, you realize what this means now, Caitlin.
What does it mean?
This means we're now Nintendo shills. because the console wars of the 90s never ended.
True, yeah.
And we have taken a stand, and so consequently we have lost all credibility on all matters of Sega properties going forward.
Yeah, we had a good run.
It's a shame, really. So that was Road Rash, and now a brief break to hear from our sponsors.
Taxes was feeling so stuck. Sitting in traffic, squeezing into a parking spot, all to squeeze in getting tax help during your lunch break. Now Taxes is a TurboTax expert who does your taxes for you, while you go about your day getting real-time notifications about their progress and the most money back guaranteed. Now this is Taxes, Intuit TurboTax. Get an expert now on TurboTax.com. Only available with TurboTax Live Full Service, real-time updates only in iOS mobile apps. See guarantee details at TurboTax.com/guarantees.
And we're back. We are now going to move on to our feature game. Our feature game is Thank Goodness You're Here, which was developed by Cole Supper, released this year for the PC. Caitlin, why don't you tell us what happens in Thank Goodness You're Here, if you can.
that is quite the request. So this game, they call it in the game description, they call it a slap former, where it's a platformer where the only thing you can do other than jump around is slap people or things. It's a weird game. If I had to compare it to any other game that I've played, I would say Untitled Goose Game probably comes closest.
Same publisher.
In Thank Goodness You're Here, you are causing loads of chaos while quote unquote helping people. The citizens of this town definitely seem to appreciate your efforts despite everything. And I honestly don't understand why they would appreciate your efforts, because they generally lead to complete chaos, things being broken, there's trash everywhere. But this game is incredibly British. I really enjoyed, like, the very first thing that you're asked when you boot this up, and I'm not even going to say this correctly, but there was this text box that said, like, Atha from Tarn. And you can either say dead rate or sorry, what? And I said, sorry, what? If you say sorry, what, then the local dialect gets translated for you in the subtitles. And then you have more standard menu text. Otherwise, things like options will say faff instead. And continue game would be keep going. So, yeah, it was just very, very British. Never played anything quite like it before.
It's not British. It's very north of England.
Okay.
It is very, very specific. I don't know lot about different English or different British dialects. It's just we clearly, over the course of the past few weeks here at AmFab, have been touring the British Isles in terms of new dialects and accents to expose ourselves to. There was Still Wakes the Deep, which was incredibly Scottish. There was Metaphor Refantasio, which has really leaned into fantasy means British, and so they just lumped in a whole bunch of different regional dialects. You going to the north of England, the south of England, I could swear I heard some Welsh going on there. There's some incredibly regional, strange regionalisms. The two brothers that have radically different, but also very, very specific regional accents of British English. It's so weird. And then on top of that, we then cap it off with Thank Goodness You're Here, which at least feels very grounded in its use of language. Let me be clear. Only in its use of language. In no other way is Thank Goodness You're Here grounded. It's just extraordinarily north of England. Yes. And so it is the language, the meat pies, the food jokes, the endless food jokes, the endless meat pies. There's a place here in Kingston, Ontario that is that has opened recently called the British Pride Bakery. And I've been inundated on social media with various advertising for them, a whole bunch of things about various pasties and sausage rolls and such of that nature. And so I feel like that had been priming me for my experience with Thank Goodness You're Here.
Yeah, this game felt to me like a 2-hour-long fever dream. It's just so weird. So your character is you're a tiny little guy. You are very bright yellow. That is your color, which I guess helps you stand out from the rest of the environment. So you're some kind of salesman. I honestly don't even remember what kind or if that's ever specified, but you're supposed to go to this town and talk to the mayor. And that's the setup for the game. The game opens up. You're in the mayor's office. You find out that the mayor is busy and you have to wait. And then while you're waiting, you could hop off that chair and go check out the city. And then the next 2 hours is what happens while you're waiting for the mayor to be ready for you, I guess. So you just walk around this very interesting little town. You help people out by slapping various things. It's weird.
There's a reason why we are grasping for terminology. And that is because Thank Goodness You're Here is deliberately subversive of any kind of sense much of the time.
Mm-hmm.
In point of fact, one of the things that happens in the background of one of the scenes is there is literally graffiti of someone urinating on the word ludonarrative, which on the one hand I appreciate because ludonarrative is a word that I've encountered a number of times over the course of my either board gaming or video gaming consuming career, so to speak. And although I recognize that it is a useful term, I find it very obnoxious in a number of ways, and so I have a negative reaction to ludonarrative. But it's basically to be fair, it's very much what you and I are into. It's that intersection of gameplay and storytelling. And thank goodness you're here doesn't care. And it wants you to know that it doesn't care. And the fact that the only way you can interact with people is by literally slapping them. Now, sometimes this is literally slapping them, and sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's just a generic way of you pinging their attention, and they'll, you know, respond by just saying, oh, thank goodness you're here, let's do this thing. And sometimes it's literally hitting them, causing them to drop what they're eating, or in some cases, causing a shop to be closed on account of smacky bum bum.
Yeah.
How did this make you feel, that your primary mode of interaction was the slap former?
So early on in the game, I was like, oh man, like this guy's sleeping. I don't want to just slap him. That seems mean. But by the end, I was just running around slapping everything to see what would happen.
My misgivings lasted a little bit longer. I mean, I eventually got over it. That's just how the game works. It actually reminded me of an axiom of science fiction storytelling that a famous author once said, that when there's absolutely no means of communication, it invariably the only way to communicate is through violence. And I, you know, again, this little guy doesn't talk. He doesn't say anything. He's just this diminutive traveling salesman. And you're just walking around smacking everything like a little agent of chaos. Smacking garbage bags to make gorgeous rap music, smacking post boxes so they disgorge their mail, smacking people so they drop their lunch. And I mean, I found it a little bit disquieting to be effectively cast as an obnoxious agent of chaos, even though the game doesn't frame it as such.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting that at all. Like, Untitled Goose Game, you know what you're there to do immediately.
Yes.
And this one, I did not. It took a little bit to figure out what I was there to do.
So you mentioned that it felt like a 2-hour long fever dream.
Yes.
One thing I want to stress, though, is that in the context of that 2 hours, you do rather a lot of backtracking, which yes. is unusual. Especially when, and again, this is the kind of joke that on the one hand I appreciate, but on the other hand, I feel it's not quite as bad as the jokes that Undertale made about how bad their puzzles are, but it's almost there. There's a sign at one point in Thank Goodness You're Here that says, quote, liminal spaces may be less engaging than they appear, end quote. In other words, this is a transitional scene, ain't nothing for you to do here, move along.
Yeah.
And I'm like, are you telling me that you're wasting my time? Is this you just telling me that the backtracking is pointless padding for your game that's already less than 2 hours long?
Yeah.
I didn't know how to react to that.
Yeah, that was something that I struggled with a little bit when I was finished, because this game, I bought it for $20 US, and I already knew going in that it was going to be short, because I looked up how long it was ahead of time. And I hesitate to say that it's not worth $20 as well, because I don't know what being worth $20 means. But it definitely is, it's quite expensive per hour or minute of entertainment. So it's a little, it would be tough to recommend to someone else, because I would have to be really sure that they would enjoy this game and the humor of it for me to tell them, you know, go spend $20 on this.
I'm in the exact same place. And to me, the cognitive dissonance is perhaps even more profound, because this is the kind of thing that I want more games to do, to be weird, to be yeah. transgressive, to be subversive. But at the same time, I don't know how many of them I want to buy. And I, too, am sitting here thinking, one of my primary thoughts was, and I almost never have this reaction, despite the fact that I play lots of games that are pretty much them talking at me, I never had this reaction for Still Wakes the Deep, for example. But after having finished Thank Goodness You're Here, I definitely started thinking, this probably should have been a movie. Because I think that in terms of, I mean, the animation is movie quality often. And I guess that's high praise in the context of a video game. And It reminded me a little bit sometimes of the absurdist works of Don Hertzfeldt, who's an animator. If you search his name, a lot of people have seen his stuff. He's done a variety of very YouTubed cartoons about his fake rejected videos promoting various products and services. But at any rate, yeah, I'm so conflicted. So the dollar per quantum of entertainment, I think, is a legitimate framework for a lot of people, especially those with less disposable income than we have. Mm-hmm. We are not wealthy people, but we have enough disposable income that we can spend $20 on a game that's an hour and 45 minutes and not worry about where our next meal is going to come from, or feel like that this was the one game we could buy this week, and yeah, now we don't have anything to play for the rest of the week. If you're in that situation, I cannot recommend in any way, shape, or form that you get Thank Goodness You're Here, especially since, you know, I talked about playing Destiny 2 for 6 hours, not giving them any money, for example. There's lots of ways that you can get better into here, but I started looking at other things that have cost roughly the same amount of money recently, and either one of Risk of Rain 2 or Risk of Rain Returns is less expensive than Thank Goodness You're Here. Tactical Breach Wizards is only slightly more expensive than Thank Goodness You're Here. And let me tell you, in terms of Tactical Breach Wizards in particular, is it as transgressive, as subversive? Does it have the same quality of visuals as Thank Goodness You're Here? No. It doesn't feel as grounded either. It doesn't feel like it's a window into a particular kind of satirical, perverted vision of North England. But those characters are going to stay with me in a way that a lot of the things in Thank Goodness You're Here were just gags that I thought were really clever and inventive, but they're just going to pass through me like so many meat pies. And that was a that was a simile that got away from me. I'd like to apologize to the people of the north of England and anyone else involved in the pasty industry, but here we are. I'm not going to take it back. And so, I look back at Still Wakes the Deep, which is $45 Canadian, but is 4 to 6 hours. And again, there are some things in Still Wakes the Deep that are going to stick with me, like a number of the characters and a number of the things that happened. And it has a sense of place and gives you a little bit of a window into regionalism, although not quite in the same way as. But by the same token, I say all this and I'm having all these thoughts, but by the same, I'm still thinking, am I happy that a video games industry can maintain simultaneously Call of Duty and Thank Goodness You're Here? And the answer is yes. And I would feel sad if we didn't have things like that. So yeah. I don't know where to sit, frankly.
Yeah, I don't either. Because, I mean, I wrote in my notes for this game, I'm not upset that I bought it, but ...
I don't know. I'm very happy it exists. I don't know if I'm very happy that I bought it, frankly. Mm. And I hate to say this, but it's a frank truth if we're going to be discussing economics. I checked because I was thinking about recommending it to people, and in terms of being able to convey the particular tone of humor, I'm thinking, okay, well, the intro is very evocative of the humor, and there are some ads for meat pies that go on, and indeed, some of those, it's weird, insofar as there are plot elements, there are kind of plot seeds that are planted in the context of some of the opening ads. There's a whole discussion about the size of meat pies and fractional differences and the whole thing. There's one-ish touching moment in Thank Goodness You're Here, I would say, but the size of a character's head. But anyway.
Yes.
And I looked on YouTube. You can just watch an entire playthrough of Thank Goodness You're Here without commentary. It's there on YouTube. It's an hour and 45 minutes. It's the entire game. All the gags, almost all the dialogue. And so frankly, if you're interested in supporting the games industry, then maybe I recommend buying it. But if you're interested in experiencing the absurdity of Thank Goodness You're Here, given that there's practically no gameplay to speak of, maybe just watch it on YouTube. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that goes right back to your, maybe this should have been a movie. But it can be a movie. Kind of.
I don't feel great about pointing that out. I'm not even recommending necessarily you go watch it on YouTube. I think that would be a disservice to the creators who are clearly very talented and put a lot of work into this. And again, once we start talking about how much should a game be, you then start asking, well, how much work did people put into it? How much money is going back to various people, right? Like, when you buy Cyberpunk 2077 or The Witcher 3, you're literally profiting, you're literally taking advantage of months of crunch time of abused hundreds of graphic designers that get pennies on the dollar for everything, blah, blah, blah. It's so complicated and messy. It's so difficult to be a responsible consumer in a contemporary context. And I don't know what to tell people. But ultimately, I think it is. It's a major question for a video gamer. And I think it's one that each individual consumer has to make for themselves. It's just, I think it's incumbent on us to grapple with it as much as we can, or at least flag as many of the details. And that's the best I can do in the context of feeling so conflicted.
Yeah, I hear you. One thing that I would also recommend is just to check out the reviews on Steam. Because a lot of people talk about a lot of different aspects of the game and why they liked it or didn't like it. Granted, I believe that the reviews are overwhelmingly positive. So you're going to find a lot more positive reviews than not. But some of those might help also give you an idea of like whether this is something that you want to go for.
I'm very, very glad to have experienced Thank Goodness You're Here. It is genuinely Same. Delightful. And any misgivings I have about economics or the length of it or the fact that you only engage in things in a violent way that kind of ooked me out on a couple of occasions should in no way undercut the fact that I was grinning through a lot of it. I laughed through some of it. I was kind of touched briefly by it. And I have not experienced anything like it
Yes.
in my media consuming life, suffice to say. And so personally, I guess I'm talking myself into the idea that I think $20 Canadian is a very small price to pay for a singular experience like that, even though if I'd wanted to, I could have legally consumed it for free on YouTube.
Yeah.
Like a freeloader. So that is Thank Goodness You're Here. Possibly the last that we'll be talking about incredibly regionally dialect-inflected games, but who knows? We'll see what happens. We now move on to shameless hyping of upcoming titles. Caitlin, what would you like to shout out for us?
Okay, so this is going to be pretty predictable, probably, based on the first thing I spoke about. But I'm going to shout out A Shelter Full of Cats. That's the next game that's coming out by DevCats. It's supposed to be coming out in Q4 of this year. And I'm excited to have yet another hidden object kitty cat game.
It looks exactly like their other products.
It does, and that's exactly what I want from them.
Precisely. It is good to know your audience. It is good to know your niche. And sometimes formulas exist for a reason. And as much as we might appreciate that Thank Goodness You're Here looks at the box, takes a piss on the box, literally and figuratively, and then walks away and does its own thing, sometimes being in the box is nice.
Yes. Totally agreed. What are you going to shout out today, Mark?
I would like to shout out not a game, but a soon-to-be-had product. At the time of your listening to this, it should be shipping either now or very soonish, and that is the Retroid Pocket 5. These are the makers of Android-based handheld emulation devices, and I've been waiting for Retroid to make a device like this for a while because they've got a bunch of stellar devices already. I highly recommend the Retroid Pocket Flip and the Retroid Pocket 4 Pro, but the problem is the screen is just a little bit too small for my tastes. The screen on those two is a 4x7-inch diagonal, which is not great. It's just a little frustrating, too small. The Retroid Pocket 5 has a 5.5-inch display, which is wonderful. A number of other devices have screens that size. With the power of the Retroid Pocket 5, it's going to be running a Snapdragon 865, which is more than enough to play PlayStation 2 and GameCube, which is very much what I want to do with a lot of these devices. But the problem is, and this is a very personal thing, I like to have the D-pad on top. I'm a D-pad top guy. It's how I was raised. It's just how I like to do things. And so all these other things I have an Odin 2. It's wonderful. Don't get me wrong. But the stick's on top, and I just can't live that way. It's just not. It bothers me every time. And so I'm very, very happy for the Retroid Pocket 5 to be coming out. It's also a little bit smaller, a little bit more compact. Some people are all about AMOLED screens, Caitlin. Mm. Can you tell the difference between an OLED screen and a non-OLED screen immediately when using something?
Honestly, no. I mean, I got the OLED switch, but the screen, I think, is slightly bigger, and that's the main thing I noticed. So,
yeah. My friend Tech Dweeb is an OLED screen enthusiast, and he's like, oh, yeah, there's no comparison. I just, ever since I got my Steam Deck OLED, I can't go back. I'm like, really? So he like literally put two things next to each other on a table, and I was looking at them run the same content. And I was like, see how different they are? I'm like, I see the difference. I see why you would prefer this one. I can barely tell it's there. To me, the thing that I notice actually is I notice size as well as you do. I also notice brightness. Mm-hmm. The screen is really bright, and I sometimes notice color saturation. But other than that, like, it's like, oh, the blacks are so black. I'm like, okay, good for you. Like, I get it. Like, people like what they like. Anyway, Retroid Pocket 5 also has an OLED screen. I'm not there for the OLED screen. I don't object to it. But primarily, I'm there for the form factor. I'm there for the combination of price, power, performance, as well as the excellent solid controls and the D-pad on top. Early reviews are in. People have pre-production copies. It looks glorious. Apparently, it's also going to be able to run Rocknix, which is my favorite Linux-based operating system, which is going to run really, really well with Portmaster, which I talked about a few weeks ago, and so this could be the one and all. Run everything. I'm really looking forward to it. The Retroid Pocket 5.
Nice. It looks cute. I really enjoy that there's a GameCube color one as well. Like, it's that same GameCube purple.
People are losing their minds over the GameCube purple and the fact that the right stick is yellow. I was never a GameCube guy. I don't like the GameCube. And so I just got the boring black one.
Ah, Mark.
I'm a Philistine. What can I say? Don't like the GameCube. Can't tell the difference between OLED screens.
It's all right. I forgive you.
Just can't be salvaged. Well, that's going to do it for this week. Thank you so much for joining us. For All My Best Friends Are Digital. Thank you also to our dear patrons. We are very, very pleased so far with the reaction to our Patreon. We're very grateful for your support. And I've been very, very pleased to read Caitlin's contributions to the Patreon so far. We've got some lovely wallpaper, and we've got a newsletter already up. I've got a bonus episode that I'm going to prep once my voice is not in the process of failing all the time. So once my health buttresses, you'll be able to enjoy that. And you can check us out on patreon.com/amfad for all of your supportive needs. But anyway, this is always going to be free media, so don't worry too much, but we do appreciate your support. And we hope to see you again soon. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks everybody.
Thank you so much for listening. If you'd like to get in touch, you can reach us at allmybestfriendsaredigital@gmail.com. Hope to see you again soon.
Taxes was feeling so stuck. Sitting in traffic, squeezing into a parking spot, all to squeeze in getting tax help during your lunch break. Now Taxes is a TurboTax expert who does your taxes for you, while you go about your day getting real-time notifications about their progress and the most money back guaranteed. Now this is Taxes, Intuit TurboTax. Get an expert now on TurboTax.com. Only available with TurboTax Live Full Service, real-time updates only in iOS mobile apps. See guarantee details at TurboTax.com/guarantees.